ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
In Atlanta, one voice has stood out for over four decades. An AJC original, The Monica Pearson Show.
Let's talk about how you got to ESPN.
Revealing interviews.
You are known as America's doctor, but I want to know who you were before that.
When you have a different name, you have different color skin, it can be tough.
With Atlanta's most famous faces as you've never seen them before.
I'm telling my story. This is the American dream.
The Monica Pearson Show, streaming now on AJC.com.
Hello, and welcome to a special edition of the Politically Georgia podcast, Race for City Hall. I'm your host, Greg Bluestein, and I'm here with City Hall reporters Will Novos III and J.D. Capilouto to talk about all the latest in the race for mayor of Atlanta. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So, look, I bet you can't even count how many debates and forums you've counted, but just in the past few days, there's been, of course, the AJC debate, the forum that was very cordial. You had the sometimes tense WSB debate. You had the Atlanta Press Club debate that was pretty much entirely tense. You had a much more cordial 11 Alive one the other day. What have you learned, if anything, as the people who have been watching this race closer than anyone, what have you learned, if anything?
There are too many of them.
Too much information.
Councilman Dickens mentioned last week at the 11 Alive debate that there are like 20 to 25 forums they've participated in. So, you know, Councilman Dickens mentioned at the 11 Alive debate that they've been to about 20 to 25 forums. So, honestly, if you're plugged into this as much as we are, you can feel some fatigue.
Yeah, I think it's more than 20 to 25, honestly, since in the last few months. I mean, and even with the debates that we're now having, which are more traditional, what you expect in a political race, we're still having the everyday forums. Just this, last week I was at, a forum that was in Buckhead that was all about Buckhead issues, where it was just very cordial, not as much of the, contentious clashes between the candidates. So we're still having those as well. So it's been a busy, busy time.
Now, Will, you got to panel your first debate in Atlanta.
Oh boy.
Yeah. The Atlanta Press Club debate the other day. Give us a behind the scenes glimpse of what it was like to come up with the questions, to be before the cameras for the first time. You might have done it in New Orleans before, but the first time in Atlanta, being sort of in the spotlight.
Yes, I'm not a fan of the spotlight. I usually like to be, I enjoy to be behind the camera rather than in front of it with the folks, the real stars of the show. Yeah, no, it was interesting. I had to sit in the makeup chair. I got there late, so actually I didn't sit in the makeup chair. I sat in the camera chair and they did my makeup right then and there.
Got the touch up right there.
Yeah. Ooh, yeah, my nice shiny bald head. So no, it was really interesting. I was a panelist alongside Rose Scott. She was awesome. I created all the questions myself. A lot of the questions were questions that we actually came up with for our own AJC forum, and I said, yeah, we didn't have time to get to these questions, so let me just throw them out at this debate.
Now, JD, you were covering the debate from the media room at GPB. What was a standout moment for you when you're listening to this that maybe pushed the ball a little forward?
Yeah, I think, the news from that debate, like you mentioned earlier, was just how tense things got. Like, the knives really came out. You had Kasim Reed calling Andre Dickens the Wile E. Coyote of this.
How can we trust that you've made a change when you still have a blind spot to corruption even today?
Andre, you're the Wile E. Coyote of this. The bottom line is this. I understand and accept responsibility for the things that happened in my administration, the actions that were taken. But if you look at the individuals, their behavior did not relate to systemic corruption of your government. Corruption at Hartsfield-Jackson, absolutely not. Corruption at bid rigging, absolutely not. We have a lot of work to do to make sure that this doesn't happen again. But the one thing that I can guarantee you is that Andre Dickens isn't the person to talk about it. He left a bankruptcy. He left owing $1.3 million to women and men. without ever being held accountable. And then he used a false address to actually run for Atlanta City Council. Unfortunately, I have the bankruptcy petition right here. You should see how he lived his life while he's talking about mine.
30-second rebuttal?
Yeah, that's categorically false. Yes, I had a bankruptcy. In 2010, during the Great Recession, millions of people lost their job, millions of people lost their homes, and 1.5 million people filed bankruptcy. I had a furniture business from 2002 to 2010, and that business failed during the housing crisis because furniture goes with housing. But I paid all my employees. That business had 20 employees, three locations, and even Kasim Reed was a customer. This business was good, and then we need to talk about the moral bankruptcy of you having seven people
seconds.
In your administration
you.
To be able
Antonio
to get
Brown,
indicted.
We're going to move on.
And so you did a great job selling furniture, but you never paid back the $1.15 million
that you owed to
credit.
We are going to move on to Antonio Brown's question.
Bankruptcy is legal. And I did it in a proper
question.
Way. What
and
you and your administration have done is illegal.
We have a lot of ground to cover
jail,
tonight, and I'm going to ask you to stick to your time.
And then, of course, former Mayor Reed and Council President Felicia Moore went at it too. They had a lot of back and forth. That was definitely something where in the press room, every time that happened, our ears kind of perked up. We're like, oh, haven't really seen that before.
Mr. Reed, you headed the most corrupt administration in Atlanta history. The rap sheet, people jailed, indicted, awaiting trial, $30 million and counting for DOJ responses. And it keeps going. The tone is set from the top. Criminals like your Melody. Why should Atlanta voters believe that you are singing a different tune?
Well, I'm not singing a different tune at all. What I'm offering voters is a clear choice. The bottom line is I never dishonored my office and I kept my word to the people of Atlanta. I am here because Atlanta is in a crisis that occurred under your watch. Crime is up 58%, and 157 people were murdered last year. You are attempting to smear my name, despite the fact that I am not under investigation, and you're doing that to distract from your own record, a record of a record-high tax increase, a record of not funding police officers when they needed help, a record of allowing the police department to shrink, and a record of allowing people to be murdered, all on your watch. And you never said a word, but what you did do was to always vote to raise your salary.
30 seconds for a rebuttal.
My record does not include being under investigation of any kind by any federal authorities. It does not include having the need to have criminal defense attorneys. My record has been stellar, and I've served with integrity and will continue to do so. You always said, and you said it to me directly, nothing goes down in City Hall unless you know about it. I told you I believed you then, and I believe you now. You led the most corrupt administration in Atlanta history.
And the statement that you said that I said is a complete lie. I never said nothing goes down in City Hall.
So things are testy, right? And we're in this dynamic with now 2 weeks. We're in the second week of early voting right now. We're in this dynamic where looks like, and we'll have more information on this soon because the AJC will soon come out with a poll with the latest up to date on where things stand with the top candidates in the race for mayor. But looks like Kasim Reed and Felicia Moore are the two front runners, the co-front runners. What is Kasim Reed most worried about at this point in the race?
The issue, from what I understand talking to some political strategists, is that everyone knows Mr. Reed, right? And that's either going to help him or hurt him, considering all the things that happened in his administration. Whereas Council President Moore, she's been here for several years, but she doesn't have that sort of recognition. So she can kind of define her image. And so Kasim has to do that before she can. And that's why you see his Felicia Means More Crime.com effort that his campaign is funding. And it's you're just going to see more of that because it's clear now that he thinks that's his main opponent. Right, JD?
Right. He's definitely targeting her directly more than any other candidate. But also she does have, you know, way more name recognition than some of the other candidates in the race still. And that's what they say is kind of their chance to get to a runoff is, look, you have these two candidates who are really well known in Atlanta and you still have so many people undecided. So clearly they're looking for something different. And so, you know, and Andre Dickens, Antonio Brown, Sharon Gay, they're all saying, look, you all know these people and they're not rising in the polls. So that's where we kind of have the chance to build that momentum heading into, you know, these final 2 weeks of early voting.
Yeah. And our last AJC poll showed a whopping 40 something percent of voters were undecided. Other polls have showed it close to a third. So there's still a huge number of polls that show so many undecided voters. So these three other main candidates, Andre Dickens, Antonio Brown, Sharon Gay, what are they trying to do to break out of that pack? Because I've heard a lot more aggressive stances from Andre Dickens in particular going at it with the mayor, former Mayor Reed, at some of these recent debates.
Yeah, Councilman Dickens, it's clear that what he's trying to do is he doesn't want folks to think he's weak, frankly speaking. I mean, say what you will about Mr. Reed, he does have a reputation for being a very aggressive politician, right? So his opponent is going to have to show voters that I can be aggressive as well. And I think that was really what we saw at last week's Atlanta Press Club debate. I mean, Dickens and Reed had this intense crossfire, and that's just all a part of what Mr. Reed called the inside baseball of politics.
Let's listen to a cut of that. Put your sort of consultant hat on, not to ask you to go cross journalism lines, but if you're watching Sharon Gay, you're watching Antonio Brown, what hope do they have to muscle into that top two right now?
I would say continuing with advertisements. I don't think we've seen Antonio Brown release an ad yet. That is something that would probably benefit him just to get that name recognition out there, especially because he's the candidate that stands out the most from the rest in terms of his beliefs. And he's definitely, you know, the most progressive candidate in terms of his stances on criminal justice and public safety. And so I think, you know, owning that and, you know, being more visible with that could be definitely a step for him. As for Sharon Gay, she was on the air for a while and then took her ads off, and her campaign didn't say why. They said they don't comment publicly on strategy. So that's anyone's guess.
And it could be because of money issues.
Possibly.
You guys reported on fundraising.
Yeah.
Recently, former Mayor Reed has a commanding lead in terms of the money game. And that matters for this final stretch because that's when voters are starting to tune in and they're going to look at these ads and say, you know, Kasim Reed's ad or Felicia Moore's ad sticks in their minds.
And I really hope that we get to see Councilman Brown's financial report. I mean, it was an unfortunate circumstance happens where his documentation cannot be uploaded onto the city website, so we couldn't find the information. But to your point, Greg, it's amazing that all of these candidates are either raising or investing so much into their campaigns. And what's more interesting to me is the rate at which they're spending money. So like Reed made darn near had nearly $3 million, but he only has like 900 grand left.
Only 900 grand?
I know, right? Oh, must be nice. but seriously, like, and then the other candidates, Ms. Gay invested more than $1 million into her campaign, but she has like 470 grand left. Long story short, I mean, they're really burning through this money. And I wonder if Councilman Brown, if he has money at that level, if he's going to start throwing a whole bunch of bucks toward advertising. I don't know, because hopefully we see that report this week.
Yeah. Of the four candidates, the top four candidates that have released reports, Councilman Dickens has the least amount left in the bank. He did raise over $1 million, and he said he's very proud of how he was able to do that. But he has 200,000 left. And so that shows how he's been spending a lot on ads in the last few weeks here.
And this is also a moment where Sharon Gay, who's independently, you know, who's earned a lot of money in her career as a lawyer, this is where she's got to decide too, whether she pumps more money into her own campaign to get across the finish line, or if she holds pat at where she is. She's already, as you mentioned, invested seven figures. Does she put more money in to try to fund some more advertising, some more staffers, more grassroots organizers to get out the vote and knock on doors? Or does she basically say, look, you know, there's not much more that she can do?
Right. I think new polling could also dictate that as well.
Yeah. Well, let's take a quick break. I have a lot more questions for you guys, but let's take a quick break before we get back to it.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach. An air freshener can make your car smell like paradise. A drive to Daytona Beach will actually get you there. Beach on. Plan your trip today at DaytonaBeach.com.
And we're back to the special edition of Politically Georgia podcast, Race for City Hall. I'm here with J.D. Capiluto and Will Nobles III, our two amazing City Hall reporters. Thanks, guys, for joining us.
Happy to be here.
Hello, hello.
So we talked about what you guys have learned in the recent debates and forums about the candidates, but you also hit the actual neighborhoods and streets and communities with the voters who will be deciding this race with a team of AJC reporters. And so I'm curious to see, to find out what was the kind of standout issues you learned about the people, the topics that were on people's minds from those interviews.
Yeah, this was such a fun project, at least for me personally. We picked seven neighborhoods and kind of had a team of reporters. Will and I each went to two, and then some other people each hit one neighborhood. And it's a video series, so you can check that out on AJC.com. But it was really, really interesting to talk to voters, not really in a political sense. We weren't interested in knowing which candidate they were going to vote for, but we wanted to know, like, what do they want from the next 4 years at City Hall? What I heard a lot, obviously crime, but a lot of people were very specific about addressing 911 responsiveness, but also addressing the mental health aspect of that and getting more to the root causes of crime. And affordable housing, growth was something I heard so much.
The big issues are the same here in Buckhead as they are anywhere else, you know. Taxes, education funding, resources, infrastructure. Most recently, the perception of an increase in crime.
I had the neighborhoods of North Buckhead and Westview, which is in southwest Atlanta.
In terms of displacement, we have our legacy neighbors who currently can't fulfill their tax obligations. Just because of the comps in the neighborhood, their taxes obviously are going up. They are feeling the pressure of needing to keep their homes up. These homes were built between 1925 and 1935. So there's a lot of maintenance that needs to happen. At the same time that they're facing these maintenance items on their homes, we are getting calls from developers who also want to move into this neighborhood.
Our property taxes shot up between last year and this year. I can only imagine what that feels like for people who paid, you know, $30,000 for their home, $50,000 for their home.
And in both of those neighborhoods, growth and housing and housing costs were on near the top of voters' minds, almost as much as crime. And that was interesting because obviously it was different kind of ways they were grappling with it and different types of growth they were seeing in both of those neighborhoods, but it was still the top issue.
And this is really cool for me because, you know, I literally moved to the city last year. And so I didn't know that much about Atlanta. And so I went to the communities of Summer Hill.
We've been here for 37 years. Yes. So we've seen some of the worst of Summer Hill and, you know, we've seen some of the improvements and then some of the best of Summer Hill.
As well as Vine City, which are both just super historical places, right? You had the Olympics in Summer Hill and you had, you know, the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and his wife, Ms. Coretta Scott King, they both lived in Vine City. Former Mayor Maynard Jackson lived there. So there's just so much history at these places.
What is the centerpiece to our city's legacy and vision that should be big? This isn't a small town legacy. And so in my opinion, it's always been centered in justice. It's always been centered in equity, equality. And right now, we're a city that it's just so divided.
And, you know, unsurprisingly, the folks said, yeah, crime is an issue. We're worried about crime. In Vine City, the folks we spoke to, they were particularly passionate about wanting the next mayor to have a better relationship with the police and to ensure that police officers get proper training and accountability, but also due process, right?
The community appreciates the awesome investment that has been made in Vine City and for Vine City's future. Now, that future needs to be more engaging with those from, well, in the faith community, they said from the uttermost to the guttermost. But we can look back at this place and time that we made a difference.
And so in Vine City, there was also concern about crime, but there was also concern about these root causes of crime, right? Such as addressing poverty and ensuring that affordable housing is there, especially for long-time residents. So yeah, it was a mix, and it's so fun talking to, folks are gonna hate me for saying this, real people, right?
A journalism term.
Yeah.
Man on the street, right?
Exactly, so that was always, that's always great to do.
But it's always important for us as reporters too to kind of do that gut check of, like, you know, because we'll talk to voters at rallies rallies. But those are already the energized voters who make it out to rallies in the first place, who donate the money and all that. But, you know, when you sometimes you're going door to door, you hear the real concerns from folks.
And I was talking to people last week during the start of early voting at the polling places, and these were like the most eager voters. You know, they were out there on the first day, and getting to talk to them was really rewarding just to, you know, this election. I've been covering it for almost, you know, 8 months now. So one, it was exciting to, you know, see some action happen.
Done, sort of.
It's happening.
It's the first round.
Yes. And then actually talking to people about their thoughts was fun.
So I wanted to ask you about that, because thousands of people have early voted. And of course, it's early voting around the state for municipal elections around the state. So there's races in Metro Atlanta. There's races all over Georgia, as well as the mayor's race. But the mayor's race is one of our main topics and of course, most prominent areas of coverage. Have we learned anything yet in terms of the numbers of early voters? Has there been a neighborhood? Is it just too early to see if people are energized to early vote yet?
I think it's too early to see. I'm hoping to get some information on that. I'm planning to ask Ben and Mark Nisi.
So stay tuned on that front, because what will end up happening is we'll have a heat map of where the early votes have come from. It's hard to read into the parties, right? Because usually in statewide elections, we'll look at Democratic-leaning voters, Republican-leaning voters turning out. It's hard to do that because it's a different sort of race. But we'll eventually have a heat map, so we'll be able to say, oh, Buckhead turned out in waves, and Southwest Atlanta did as well. What does that mean? It's hard to read into that. It was easier, I'll say, in 2017 because you had geographic divides more between the candidates. In this contest, though, it's so muddled. It's going to be hard to make any sort of predictions.
I agree. It's going to kind of be really interesting to see that final map, especially, you know, at the end when it sees who voted for what across the city, precinct by precinct. I think you'll see more mixture than we did back in 2017.
Now, one more topic of conversation that dominated a few of your days last week and partly mine too, which was all the shenanigans are starting, right? I mean, you know, there's always been an underlying level of shenanigans, but as early voting starts, so does the level of shenaniganry. I don't know what you call it, but the tomfoolery and the campaigns, and this is nothing new for City of Atlanta or for Georgia for that matter, or for any sort of politics, but it really hit a new sort of wave of tension with a phony text message that went out to a lot of Democrats saying, hooray, the Fulton County Republican Party has endorsed Felicia Moore. And there's pictures of
Trump.
Yeah, there's pictures of Felicia Moore with, it was like sort of transference of properties. There's pictures of Felicia with Burt Jones, and then pictures of Burt Jones, who's a state senator, with Donald Trump. So it was like sort of guilt.
Transitive property.
Transitive. That's why I didn't major in
science. Separation right there.
Yeah, a couple of degrees. And obviously, that was a false tweet. I mean, it took only a few minutes for us all to figure that out. That this was a campaign gambit. We're not sure where it came from, but we are certain it was meant to depress Felicia Moore support.
It was also meant to bring attention to the fact that the Fulton County Republican Party did have a meet and greet with Felicia Moore a few days before that text was sent. And so it was kind of meant to, you know, kind of boost that, the fact that that happened, and in it, hoping to hurt her performance among Democratic voters. They have clarified that they're not endorsing anyone. It's a nonpartisan race. And Felicia Moore has come out and said, look, there's people in this city that are Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, Independents. I'm going to look for votes where I can get them.
Mm-hmm. And of course, Republicans, I know a lot of Republicans who are supporting Kasim Reed. I know some Republicans supporting Andre Dickens and Sharon Gay. So not many who are supporting Antonio Brown, but who knows? But that is a vote that's up for grabs, because 4 years ago, most Republican voters gravitated toward Mary Norwood in the city of Atlanta. There might be 30-35% of the city's voters might be Republican, maybe more. But now there's no clear home for the GOP voters.
Right.
So they're all the candidates are courting GOP voters in their own ways.
Mm-hmm. It's going to be really important to do. And the fact that someone even manufactured that sort of flyer, it does speak to the concerns that the opponents have. We don't know who made it, right? But it's clear that folks think Madam President is a threat in terms of being a serious contender. So, we'll see. I'm sure that we're going to see more wild flyers and advertisements like that. with no folks claiming responsibility. So
it is silly season.
Yeah, I was gonna say
silly season.
Yeah, Felicia called it silly season has begun, and she's not the only candidate who have been targeted by this. I mean, because former Mayor Reed.
Yeah, he's experienced the brunt of these advertisements from billboards to websites to weird YouTube videos, splicing old interviews of his sound bites. Mr. Dickens had a defund the police vote for Andre Dickens sign or two out there. So, yeah, all of them are dealing with it in some shape and form, but especially, you know, former Mayor Reed and Council President Moore.
And to be clear, the Dickens sign was, no one knows who made that, and it was meant to hurt him because of his vote last year in support of withholding some police funds so they could figure out what to do with them. But it wasn't a defund the police vote, so a little bit misleading there.
Yeah, there'll be a lot more of that to come. We are definitely in silly season. And look to the AJC, look to the Race for City Hall blog for all the latest up-to-date information and sometimes debunking information, because I know you guys got a lot of phone calls that night. I got a lot of phone calls that night from freaked out, mostly Democrats, but some Republicans saying, wait, what? The Fulton GOP is taking a stance in this race? What's happening? People were freaking out. And sometimes that's the role we play, is telling people, no, it's not happening.
Right. I think we're going to be doing more of that, especially as we get closer to Election Day. I'm already starting to see candidates bring up past votes and past actions from sometimes over 10 years ago. And sometimes it's a little bit tricky to know, you know, where the truth lies in that. So that's something that we're going to have to be
lots
on high alert for.
Lots of fact-checking to come,
oh,
for
yes.
sure.
And make sure you subscribe to the Race for City Hall newsletter. Get it in your inbox once a week, and it also runs online and in the print edition. Thank you guys for joining us, and we'll see you in a few days.
Thanks thank you, Greg. Us.
Ocean breeze, tropical beach, piña colada. You can buy an air freshener to make your car smell like you're in an oceanside paradise. Or, better yet, you can point your car toward Daytona Beach and come experience the real thing. Visit DaytonaBeach.com to discover all there is to see, do, and enjoy along the world's most famous beach, Daytona Beach, Florida. Beach on.
Donald Trump has been indicted in Atlanta.
We have so many court dockets to follow, but we haven't really seen anything yet.
The Atlanta Journal-Constitution has covered every moment of this historic case.
I've been writing about this investigation for 2.5 years.
Our team is led by reporters Bill Rankin and Tamar Hallerman. Follow our coverage on AJC.com and listen to new in-depth episodes of the award-winning podcast, Breakdown, The Trump Indictment, only from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution.